on judiciary. Appreciate you all being here, and we'll attempt to move through our agenda as quickly as possible this evening. We're going to start with a work session on House Bill 2009. Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2009 comes to you from Representative Simmons on behalf of charity bingo operators, and it makes changes to the bingo laws by increasing the amount that the prizes can be awarded to $2,500 and makes some other changes. And Representative Lowe is to carry this bill. The Dash 2 amendments were adopted in the Senate.
Representative Lowe, bingo.
Bingo. That was what the good Representative Shetterly.
That was your choke, huh?
That was his choke.
There's a dearth of new material in the bill.
The testimony in committee, colleagues, was light and lively. Idea is that by increasing the pots, they increase the attractiveness of the game to those veteran bingo players that like to play bingo, and it will enable private folks that offer these games to compete more on a better level playing field with the casino bingos. This received votes from everybody except for one. The good Representative Ringo had an objection to the notion of gambling, feeling that this would contribute to people's gambling addictions. He's very uncomfortable with that, something that I respect. But anyway, everybody else thought it was an okay idea, and that's about it.
Okay, thank you.
And with that, Mr. Chair, I move the, let's see, we adopted the Dash 2 amendments already in committee, and so I would move 2009 with that as amended before with a due pass.
Representative Lowe moves House Bill 2009 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion, Representative Ringo?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Allow me to be the curmudgeon. Opposing bingo seems pretty trivial. You know, it seems like bingo's no big deal. The testimony was that they needed to raise the limit to compete with the in-game casinos. And so on the one hand, they say this is a social event, that the elderly can get together and that they can get together and have their fun. But on the other hand, they would say they compete with Indian casinos. That's why they've got to raise the limit. I think that component of gambling is objectionable to me, and that's why I voted no.
Okay, thank you. Further comments or discussion, colleagues? Well, with that, let's gamble to see if we've got the votes to move this bill to the floor. Shannon?
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative
Dean nay.
Representative Ringo?
No.
Representative
Shetterly?
Aye.
Representative Cheryl Walker?
Excused.
Representative Vicki Walker?
Excused.
Representative Olson?
Excused.
Vice Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lowe?
Aye.
Chair Williams?
Aye. Mr. Chair, I wasn't called. I'm disappointed.
I do. I'm sorry.
If that's the worst thing that happens today, that's what
I'm Representative
Backlund. Aye.
Okay, so let me count. Just barely. House Bill 2009 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation, Representative Lowe to carry. Now open a work session on House Bill 3915.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3915 comes to you from Representative Williams on behalf of the county clerks, and it removes certain archaic references from the statutes dealing with book and docket recording by county clerks.
I want the members to know this is my take-home bill of the session.
I can just see the campaign piece.
That's right. Books and docket. Unless you have questions, colleagues, I'm happy to answer them about the bill. I think it's been sufficiently explained by counsel. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative
Shetterly. I'll move House Bill 3915 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Shetterly moves House Bill 3915 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
My notes say that I was to carry it, let me just simply say that my able and wise county clerk testified on it. It took 15 seconds. Then he left.
You talked about it longer than it probably had in hearing. So with that, and for the expediency of the evening tonight, I'm going to go ahead, if there are no objections by the committee, and suspend with roll call vote unless we have an objection on a bill. So are there objections? Hearing none, the bill will move to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And I'd like to reassign this bill. I failed to recognize, I did it this morning in our criminal sub, but I didn't this evening recognize our newest member of the full committee, Representative Dingfelder. We're glad you're here and we're glad you're with us. And in honor of that, I'd like to assign you House Bill 3915 to carry on the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Nothing like just jumping in with both feet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad to be relieved of that honor of duty.
Now, remember, it's my bill, so I'm expecting really good things from you. Okay. We will now move to House Bill 2428.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2428 comes to you from Representative Lane Shutley on behalf of the Oregon District Attorneys Association. The criminal subcommittee may remember this bill because we heard it this morning. Authorizes a court to require a juvenile offender to pay as part of restitution or reward paid for the offender's apprehension. The subcommittee adopted the Dashbone amendments.
Representative Shetterly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Dashbone amendments replace the bill and are the product of a work group effort that involved the Juvenile Rights Project, and I think the district attorneys were involved in this as well. Kathy is here. She was here this morning, Kathy Osborne. It simply authorizes the court now, in this case, to impose restitution. It authorizes the court to include in the restitution order the obligation to pay restitution for a reward that may have been authorized by the victim or organization, authorized by the victim, leading to information leading to the apprehension of a youth offender. Again, I think we took care of the concerns about this. It doesn't create a new bounty hunter kind of statute or anything like that. It's a good way to address it, and I'd recommend approval. I think the dash ones were adopted in the subcommittee, so I would move House Bill 2428 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Shetterly has moved House Bill 2428 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion by any of the committee? Any questions for Representative Shetterly?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, the bill will move to the floor with a due pass and Representative Shetterly to carry. Now open work session on House Bill 2560.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2560 comes to you from Representative Butler. The bill requires the court to order suspension of minors' driving privileges, and that's for a person under 21, if the person has been charged with minor in possession of alcohol and fails to appear in court. The Representative Ackerman is the carrier, and the committee adopted the Dash 2 amendments in subcommittee.
Representative Ackerman.
Yes, not much else to add except that the failure to appear would trigger the suspension if it was at the first appearance, which is usually the arraignment, or at trial. And the amendments clarify how that process would work within the juvenile court system.
Are there any questions for Representative Ackerman about the bill? Hearing none, Representative Ackerman?
Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 2560, as amended, be forwarded to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Ackerman moves House Bill 2560 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on his motion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, the bill will move to the floor with a due pass. Shannon, you picked up that Representative Wilson is back with us and Representative Cheryl Walker. Okay, good. Representative Ackerman, would you carry this on the floor?
Yes.
Thank you. We'll now go to work session on House Bill 2600.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. House Bill 2600 comes from Representative Patridge. This bill creates a crime of falsifying drug tests. A person commits a crime if the person intentionally uses or possesses the intent to use any substance or device designed to falsify a drug test, classifies the crime as a Class B misdemeanor, creates a crime of providing drug test falsification equipment, classifies the crime as a Class A misdemeanor. Representative Krieger is the carrier, and there are no amendments to the bill.
Representative Krieger.
I don't know what I can really add other than that we had a lot of testimony. I think that would indicate that the law or the bill is a good bill. There was some conversation that tests that are done by employers are done for the purpose of creating safety in the workplace, and it's a really a policy choice if we want to back that up and enforce it with this bill so that those tests are accurate. I think that's all I could add.
For those who weren't at the criminal subcommittee hearing on this bill, there was a very interesting testimony presented by Representative Patridge that included both a video report on how you can actually order drug falsification testing equipment and materials and have them delivered to you and falsify drug tests, as well as they brought up a website which showed you essentially how to do it over the web. So anyway, it was a fascinating little bit of hearing, and this is at least, I think, one effort to send a message that we're going to potentially prosecute people who are selling that kind of material within the state of Oregon, so we don't become sort of a haven for that. And I believe that, as I recall, the testimony was that some other states had adopted similar statutes at this point. So is there any further discussion by the committee on this issue? Representative Krieger, do you have a motion?
Yes, I'd like to move House Bill 2600 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 2600 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion to the motion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, the bill passes to the floor. And Representative Krieger, would you carry that?
Yep.
Open a work session on House Bill 2942.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2942 comes to you from the Judiciary Committee and eliminates the weight-funded formula of workload population, allows the state to give community corrections grant money to the counties for diversion and prevention programs, allows the Department of Corrections to adopt a distribution formula by rule, and requires the department to consult with a broad-based committee consisting of, but not limited to, representatives of community corrections directors, county boards of commissioners, and county sheriffs. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, subcommittee adopted the -1 and -2 amendments. When I looked at them, they're actually the -2 also contains the -1.
Did we adopt both, or did we just adopt the -2s?
I thought we adopted 1 and 2, but maybe I'm wrong.
I think we just adopted the 2s, didn't we, Representative Ackerman?
I don't know.
I mean, we get to the same point.
We get to the same point,
yes.
Okay. All right, fair enough. Representative Ackerman, you're carrying this bill?
Yes, I am. There's not much I can add. This is a pass-through, evidently, of state money to our county corrections departments to allow them to fulfill their obligation to take care of certain persons on full probation and post-prison supervision and those incarcerated for felonies for periods of less than, I think, 12 months. It provides for a better funding formula, more flexible funding formula, and a consultation with interested persons so the counties can do a more efficient job in performing these services.
Okay, are there questions for Representative Ackerman? Hearing none, Representative Ackerman?
Move House Bill 2942 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Ackerman moves House Bill 2942 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion on the motion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, the bill moves to the floor. Representative Ackerman, you're down to carry one already. Do you want this one too, or do you want to share the wealth?
I can take it.
Okay.
He doesn't want to share it.
Well, we've got a few more on the list tonight. I'm trying to balance it out. I still have Representative Ringo, Backlund, Cheryl Walker, and Wilson to try to give bills to before we're done tonight. So, great. That bill will move to the floor. Representative Ackerman to carry, and we'll open a work session on House Bill 2944.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2944 comes to you through the Judiciary Committee at the request of the Oregon Chiefs of Police Association. It requires the Board of Public Safety Standards and Training to establish the following policy committees: Corrections Policy Committee, Policy Police Policy Committee, Fire Policy Committee, Telecommunications Policy Committee. Sets of memberships creates an executive committee. We adopted the Dash 1 amendments in committee, and we had at that time had a discussion about Dash 2 by Mr. Campbell and others interested in the bill, and you needed to adopt the Dash 2 at this time. Hopefully you have a copy in your...
I don't find a copy of the Dash 2.
Maybe we can get a copy on this and bring the bill back at the end.
Okay, we're going to recess the hearing then on House Bill 2944. While the Dash 2 amendments are copied and distributed to the committee. With that in mind, we'll now go to work session on House Bill 2972.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2972 comes to you from Representative Crummell. Includes casualty insurance provider in the definition of health care provider for the purposes of including the making of false claims for health care payments to a casualty insurance company from the crime of making a false claim for health care payments. The penalty for the current statute is a Class C felony, so it includes it within that by including it in the definition. There are no amendments, committee, Mr. Chair, and you are the carrier.
I'm the carrier. Council's explained this bill, as I think I pointed out at the subcommittee level. While there are current statutes which might address essentially this kind of fraud and false claims in the system, this bill, I thought, and the testimony seemed to support, at least gave some additional more narrow tools for purposes of availing ourselves of ORS 165-690. I don't think it is a significant change, nor do I think it's a significant expansion, but it may make it a little bit easier to go after these kinds of false claims for health care payments for casualty insurance. So based on that, we move the bill to the full committee. Are there any questions that I can answer, any questions by the committee?
Is there anybody that testified, Mr. Chairman?
There was no opposition testimony to the bill.
Thank you.
All right. Based on that, I will move House Bill 2972 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection?
Do you object, Representative Walker?
Darn, I wasn't on TV with you.
I'm just teasing you. I'll give you a chance to look at it. This is House Bill 2972, which was the casualty insurance.
I was a yes in...
You were.
The substitute, I'm a fine person now.
Okay. We've always thought you were. Okay. Based on that, House Bill 2972, without objection, will move to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And Representative Wilson, will you carry that one?
I'd be delighted to loosen the rope.
All right. Representative Wilson is assigned to carry that bill. We'll go to House Bill 3037 and open a work session.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3037 comes to you sponsored by Representative Carlson. And what it does, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, creates a planning and advisory committee to make recommendations on how to increase family bonding for children who have incarcerated parents. Includes in the advisory committee representatives from the following groups that are listed in the bill on the staff interest summary. There are no amendments to the bill. I think we heard testimony, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that we have over 13,000 kids in the state with parents and prison and jail, and Representative Vicki Walker is the carrier of the bill.
Representative Walker, Vicki Walker.
How handy that I showed up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an awesome bill. We have a lot of... children of incarcerated parents out there, and this bill was brought to us by Representative Carlson, to help us with the separation of parents and trying to do, see how we can make parent bonding a little bit better in these trying circumstances. And this does set up a task force to do that, so there isn't much of a fiscal, I don't believe. We had some really heart-rendering testimony from some moms whose spouses are in prison and they have young children at home, how tough it is on little kids. It's important for us to understand that people who commit crimes do need to do time in a correctional facility, but what we often forget is that there are children in these families who didn't ask for this to happen to them, and we need to recognize that they still are parents of these children. And if their parental rights have not been taken away from them, we really need to see what we can do as a society to make sure that they stay bonded and try to grow up as whole as they possibly can. So that's why I think this is a really awesome bill.
Appreciate that, Representative Vicki Walker. We did have some what I thought was very good and compelling testimony, both by advocates for these folks as well as by the Department of Corrections on the bill. And I thought it was very well done. Perhaps some of you saw the coverage I think it was the Statesman, might have been the Oregonian, I don't remember which. One of the papers carried, I thought, a pretty good article that sort of reported on what the committee had heard that day. Is there any discussion or questions for Representative Vicki Walker on this bill?
No, I'd also, Mr. Chair, like to thank the people that came from my community to testify. One of the moms was from my community, and the psychologist from the Oregon Social Learning Center was also from my community, and someone from the Relief Nursery from my community. So it was a surprise to me to have them here, and I was very pleased.
Okay. With that, Representative Walker, do you have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 3037 to the floor with a hearty DuPatch recommendation.
Representative Vicki Walker moves House Bill 3037 to the floor with a DuPatch recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, the bill will move. Representative Vicki Walker, I'd like to assign Representative Carlson to carry the bill, but I'd like to assign you as a co-carrier as well from the committee.
Okay. I'd be delighted.
Okay. Thank you. Why don't we jump back up now that the amendments have been distributed and reopen the work session on House Bill 2944.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you have the -2 amendments in front of you. And what they basically do, they have the Department of Basic Determination of Formula adopted by the Department by rule.
I'm sorry, I got the wrong amendment.
I hope so. Can I borrow you? I put mine in the wrong file. Okay.
On page 1 of the printed bill, line 25, delete and, then line 27, delete the period, insert one non-management corrections officer employed by the Department of Corrections, and then on page 2, line 4, line 5, one non-management firefighter recommended by statewide organization of firefighters, and then the appropriate section, one non-management law enforcement officer. You may remember discussions we had before the committee about adding to these different policy committees of people who were represented non-management in that particular profession.
Representative Krieger.
Yeah, we had a lot of testimony on this bill. I think all of it was favorable, even those who were going to be affected by it, firefighters, police. One of the focal points was that the board consists now in statute of 23 members of EFST, and it's kind of a large, cumbersome thing, and a lot of the people don't really know that much about certain disciplines. They actually have already got, my understanding is, committees kind of form like the bill suggests, but this simply formalizes it in statute. One of the things that was discussed was that the individual disciplines give a better ownership of the policy that comes out of those. And the -2s, as Mr. Tedderly talks about, put someone from non-management, an officer, a police officer, a fireman, who has on-the-ground experience at the present time on that board, and I think that's a great problem.
Are there any questions for Representative Krieger about this bill? Those in the civil committee, do you have any questions? Hearing none. Representative Krieger, we need to adopt the dash twos.
Yes, I'd like to move the dash two amendments into House Bill 2944.
Representative Krieger has moved the dash two amendments to House Bill 2944. Is there any further discussion? Any questions about those? Is there any objection? Hearing none, the dash twos are adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Krieger.
I'd like to move House Bill 2944 with the dash two amendments to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 2944 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, the bill will move to the floor with Representative Krieger to carry. There were two bills that we had posted for this afternoon, members of the committee, that we did not get worked out in the criminal committee today. That's 3109 and 3661, which are going to take some further work, but we had posted them in case they were ready to move. So we won't be addressing either of those bills at this time. We will be opening a work session on House Bill 3669. Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3669 comes to you from Representative Williams. Includes knowingly exposing a child to the manufacture of amphetamines to the list of conduct that allows the court to terminate parental rights, requires the court to consider the extent of the child's exposure and the potential health to the child. You had this bill this morning in subcommittee, and the committee adopted the dash one amendments, and you are the carrier.
Thank you, counsel. I'll just briefly talk about this bill for those who weren't in the criminal subcommittee. This bill was really born out of conversations we had earlier in the session in that committee about the methamphetamine problem and its impacts primarily in families and some of the evidence that has come forward in prior testimonies. What this bill essentially does is it adds to the list of extreme conduct exposure, knowingly exposing a child to storage or production of methamphetamines from precursors, and then, as you see in the dash one amendment, in determining whether extreme conduct exists under this subsection, the court shall consider the extent of the child's exposure and the potential harm to the health of the child. The purpose is really to allow the court, the advocate for the child, the SCF caseworker, and others to determine if the exposure to methamphetamine production was sufficiently great enough to essentially warrant sidestepping the reunification procedures that they're currently obligated to go through in termination of parental rights cases. I'll note also to the members who are not on the criminal subcommittee that if you look at the comments in the fiscal analysis, you'll note that they don't anticipate a substantial fiscal, because while there may be a small increase in new termination cases, the Judicial Department believes that in many instances these would be cases that would eventually lead to termination of parental rights regardless of the change. So what we're really doing is we're giving some kids and caseworkers and judges an opportunity to look at a situation and make a determination about whether or not it's really more expedient based on the risks that were present in this particular instance to immediately terminate parental rights and move forward. And again, for those of you who didn't see all the presentation on the methamphetamine stuff we've seen so far, I think while those circumstances might vary from case to case, we know that there are certainly some circumstances where the exposure to that environment has been so great that it would, I think, warrant, and I think all of us would agree, would warrant a potential termination of parental rights. So based on that, that's what the bill does. Can I answer anyone's questions on the committee?
Can I ask a question?
You may.
Was there any testimony in opposition to this?
There was no testimony in opposition. Everyone testified favorably to the dash one amendments, and I welcomed the dash one amendments. Those are amendments that I worked out with various folks from both the Judicial Department, the Juvenile Rights Project folks. All were in favor of the amendments to the bill.
May I ask another question, please?
You may.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. By any chance, was this run past the juvenile judges just for a perception check?
It was. In fact, some of the amendments that you see incorporated in the dash ones came through Nancy Miller, from the Judicial Department.
Oh, there she is.
Yeah,
okay.
The juvenile judges
I was looking.
had an opportunity to review this in some form or another.
Oh, that's not to be Nancy.
Late-breaking news.
Late-breaking news.
The answer is...
The market is...
Yes, no, this is a reference to her testimony. We misused a phrase this morning when I think we used aggravating circumstances as opposed to extreme conduct, and that was just a mistake. It's one that I've made a couple of times in talking about this bill, but I think we're okay. Ms. Miller's question was, do we need to correct it for the record? I don't think so. I think the bill and the language of the bill speaks for itself. But there was no opposition. I also spent some time talking about this issue with Ramona Foley from Services to Children and Families. They, too, had some input and are supportive of the concept. So,
May I say one other thing?
You may.
Thank you. Last session when we were considering the Adoption and Safe Families Act, there was testimony that I don't think I'll ever forget, and that was that some states have a 60-day turnaround time on some cases requiring the court to release a child for adoption, and our state has a 15-month to 22-month process, depending upon whether or not the family attempts to rehabilitate itself. And that particular state that has that 60-day turnaround time says you are so far below the standards of good parenting that there's no hope of your rehabilitation if you don't turn around after you've been given a couple of chances by the court. That we were told that those usually involve manufacture of meth or are serious, serious drug cases. I think termination of parental rights is a horrible thing, a dreadful, dreadful, terrible thing for the an action that the state sometimes has to take to protect children, and it's not done lightly. But knowing what little I know about methamphetamine and its manufacture, the effect that it has on people, and the danger that it exposes children to, not only from exposure to the drugs, but from the standards of behavior that people fall to when they're using this, so seriously endangers children. I'm going to vote for this, but golly, I think it's a serious matter to make it easy to terminate parental rights.
Thank you, Representative Lowell. I appreciate your comments. It was important to me that we draft the bill in such a way that it didn't mandate termination of parental rights, but it simply allowed a court the opportunity to evaluate the circumstances and then make a determination along with input from all the interested parties whether or not it would be in the best interest of the child to do so in a more expedited fashion.
I think that was very wise.
And I think it's an important tool that we allow the courts as we try to address the whole methamphetamine crisis we're in at various levels. So I do appreciate your comments. Is there any further discussion or questions about the bill? Okay, hearing none, I will move House Bill 3669 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion on the motion? Any objections? Hearing none, the bill passes and moves. I'll take that one. That leaves us then, colleagues, with House Bill 3119. And I'll open a work session. Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3119 originally came from Representative Merkley, and if the bill is when it's reprinted, we probably should have to remove that particular sponsorship because this is a new issue that's been substituted in here because of the nice broad relating clause. And this is the issue that you heard in relationship to judicial review of government action, and what has come out of that is a more liberal transfer provision. At the full committee, the last time we had discussions in this issue, and you had rough amendments before you, and we, right after that meeting, or during the meeting, a whole bunch of people from local government, the bar, the AG's office, and the courts met back in my office and started working again on the language. That produced the Dash 1 amendments. Dave Hendricks was nice enough to turn that around in about a day. We email the amendments out and get comments back on those, and they are now incorporated in the dash two amendments. As the bill that we had before us the last time, the rough draft, it was still basically the dash two amendments before you have two sections. Section one, which is basically if the action has been filed in the wrong court, and then section two, if the person has filed the wrong writ. I would suggest that we have people here from local government and from the bar and from the courts and from the AG's office. They have had a chance to look at the dash ones. You may want to call them up and see where they stand on these now. I think we have general agreement on the outline. There still may be some tweaking that needs to be done. As you can imagine, a bill like this, there will always be a need for some tweaking. I guess the issue would be whether it should be done here or done in the other chamber.
Okay, with that, stellar introduction of clearly a model of cooperation. I will ask Scott if you'd come forward. Christy, do you need to come forward?
No.
Phil Schradl from the Attorney General's office. I won't elevate you to deputy today. Special counsel to Attorney General Myers. Is there anybody else here who's weighed in on this issue that needs to come forward that was involved in the work group on the amendments? Oh, Lori, please come forward. Okay, so you are filling in for Janice Krem today. We hope it wasn't liberal transfer provisions again. Welcome. Who should start? Scott?
I'd be happy to, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. The local government legal team has studied this latest proposed amendment. We think it's
Scott,
well written.
I forgot to make you officially identify yourself for the record.
My name is Scott Parker. I'm representing Association of Oregon Counties.
I beg pardon at my informality. Please proceed.
Anyway, to repeat myself just a little, we think that it's well written, especially considering the issues that were raised the last couple of work sessions that we had, informal work sessions, and I think it accomplishes the task that it set out to do, and we think it should be passed. We recommend that you approve it.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Schradl.
Chair Williams, members of the committee, Philip Schradl, special counsel to the Attorney General. Thank you much for providing the opportunity. I have just a few brief things to mention. In general, I mean, the Attorney General's Office, the Department of Justice, generally supports a transfer bill proposal. And in fact, that was one of the components of the judicial review bill. I have prepared testimony, not knowing whether I'd have an opportunity actually to submit into the record or not, but I raise a couple of points that I think the committee should consider, and I'll talk about them real briefly orally, too.
We would gladly receive your testimony, Mr. Schradl.
There are a couple of very minor, what I would view as technical tweaks that I would suggest, and one of those is that in the provision that talks about, it's section 1.3 of the bill, it refers right now to cases being transferred either by the Circuit Court or the Court of Appeals and makes reference to the fact that if there's a question about it, the court or tribunal shall refer the question to the Court of Appeals. I would submit for your consideration that if the transferring court that just made the decision was the Court of Appeals, it probably doesn't make much sense to have them, if there's a dispute that arises, the question be referred right back to the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals just already made the decision. I would suggest that there should be just an interlineation or if a case is transferred by the circuit court under this section to a court or tribunal, I think would cure that kind of rather technical defect. Then I have two other more substantive suggestions or questions. In section 1.6, It currently reads that decisions about referrals or transfer are not reviewable either by interlocutory appeal, and then it goes on to say that the decision of the Court of Appeals on a question referred to the Court of Appeals under this section is not subject to review by the Supreme Court. I believe that language is a little bit overly broad for what its intended purpose is. That arguably would mean that even at the conclusion of the case, it would not be reviewable, and I don't believe that that's the intent. And in my written comments, I suggested that the committee might, or further in the legislative process, might consideration be given to whether a better approach might be simply to require a showing by a party who wanted to challenge that, that there be a showing of some kind of a prejudice that was established or something, rather than make it not reviewable at all. Because otherwise, parties, if it's not reviewable at all on appeal, will be forced to go through a writ of mandamus or some other kind of proceeding like that. And then finally, the most substantive one that I want to talk about right now briefly is in Section 2. And Section 2 is addressed to when you are in circuit court but may have filed a wrong form of action in circuit court. The process that this proposal contemplates presently would be dismissal of that current proceeding and a refiling. And I would suggest that a more efficient and effective and less time-consuming for all parties and less costly for all parties would be simply to allow an amended pleading in the ongoing circuit court proceeding. It would not necessitate two dockets being opened by the circuit court. It would not necessitate a second filing fee being paid by the person who needs to refile. And I think it would probably cause less time delay. So with those, and I think that's the most significant question and concern that we have about it, that that process that currently exists there, I think, could be streamlined substantially. Again, in general, the Attorney General's office supports the liberal transfer proposal, but also views that as only one step in the larger picture. But with those technical things, I think would be improved.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Schrader. We'll come back to you with, I think, probably some questions. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lori Freeman. I'm on the Executive Committee of the Administrative Law Section of the Bar. I also work as an attorney for the Oregon Law Center. And Mr. Schrader has now taken all the points that I was going to make. The section supports the technical changes to Section 1, Subsection 6, especially the last sentence, which makes the decision of the Court of Appeals on a question referred not subject to review by the Supreme Court. We feel that's overbroad, probably just needs some clarification. And we also support his comments with respect to Section 2 in that we feel that the petition should be allowed to be amended rather than dismissed and refiled. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, questions by the committee on this thorny issue at 7 minutes to six on a Tuesday.
Bob
Scudder's hand. Oh, okay.
No, Representative Ackerman.
Just questions to the entire panel, I guess, because I had another opportunity to look at the bill this weekend, and I came up with these kinds of questions, and perhaps I could just direct them to you to see if I'm how close I am on this, because I hate to lose the opportunity to get this bill out. On the other hand, I don't think we're ready to pass it out at this point. The first question I had was an apparent conflict between Section 1, Sub 1, and Sub 2, where in Sub 1, a claim is filed in the Circuit Court of the Court of Appeals. We don't know which may be the right forum. And then it says the court shall transfer the case to the court or tribunal authorized by law to hear the case. I don't know what the court means. Does that mean the circuit, the motion to transfer or to decide the jurisdictional issue would be made first in the circuit court or the court of appeals? They go down to sub 2. It then says the court of appeals shall resolve all disputes. So I'm still in a conflict as to whether I think we mean that the question would be decided exclusively in the court of appeals, but Section 1 leaves me in doubt. I'm also concerned because it appears the way the bill is drafted, it states, if a court or tribunal disputes whether it's the right tribunal, I think the it doesn't say that a party can raise that issue. And I'm worried about how are we going to invoke this if it's just the court's own motion. And then there's another problem I have, is that if the motion is going to be filed, presumably in the Court of Appeals, should there be a timeline after the filing of the case before that can be decided? In other words, right now the motion could be filed any time up to final judgment. And I think there should be a timeline, perhaps after all parties have responded to the merits, 30 days or whatever, to file a motion in the appropriate forum to determine the jurisdictional problem. And then I also have a problem as to whether, if the Court of Appeals directs a transfer of the case, I think there should be a timeline there. If there's a transfer order and the case is filed in the wrong forum, I think there should be, the Court of Appeals say, should direct the transfer within 30 days or some time period so we can keep this thing going and keep this thing tracked. So I think these are more than just minor tweaks. I think these are major procedural problems which, to the practitioner or to the court, make it awfully hard to implement this section, even though I think we're trying, we're on the right track to get where we want to go. If I was a practitioner, I would not know how to implement this, because it doesn't say that the parties can file a motion. It's just that the court could, if the court disputes its authority, it does something. But usually the parties do that, not the court. Those are my comments.
Thank you, Representative Ackerman. Let me ask the panel to respond in any order you wish. I know, Scott, you had a question you wanted to respond to.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Ackerman, we were concerned, Phil asked me, whether we were sure that you were looking at the same amendment. So do you have I was looking at, did you look at the today's amendments, or are you looking at Friday's amendments?
I'm looking at the dash ones.
Dash ones, okay.
There is a set of dash two amendments.
I think we, a number of the questions that you raised, I think we struggled with Friday morning after the hearing and addressed at least some of them, although obviously the one on the decision of the Court of Appeals not subject to review by the Supreme Court, that technical one that wasn't raised. That's just a Scribner problem that can be easily fixed. Local government's focus was frankly on Section 2, and most of the other issues were raised by the Supreme Court lawyer and the Attorney General and the administrative law practitioners.
Chair Williams, Representative Ackerman. I do think that a couple of your questions about any conflicts between Section 1 and Section 2, I think were cleared up in the Dash 2 amendment.
That might be correct.
But Chair Williams, Representative Ackerman, I don't believe that any of your concerns about timing are addressed even in the Dash 2 amendments about putting any timelines on any of the transfer mechanisms or anything. So to the extent that that is a concern the committee wishes to address, that would need to be addressed in addition to any language that's currently before you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Shirley.
Well, Representative Ackerman, the language that he spoke of about the court or tribunal disputing that it's authorized to hear the case is still in the Dash 2, and that's an interesting point. If they're going to work on this, it seems to me maybe the better approach would be that if the court or tribunal determines that it is not authorized to hear the case, then you actually have a determination rather than a dispute. So if you refer it, and then the court or the tribunal to which it's referred determines that it's not, and that invites the parties to raise the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose it could be raised by the court's own motion as well. Then there's the referral. It seems to me that may work better just in process instead of inviting a court to dispute something that's been referred to it by another court or tribunal.
What section are you referring to?
I'm sorry. It's sub 3 at the bottom of the first page of the Dash 2s. It says if a case is transferred, and then Mr. Schradl has suggested by the circuit court, under this section to a court or tribunal other than the Court of Appeals and the Court or Tribunal disputes that the Court or Tribunal is authorized. And I'm suggesting that that is an odd formulation, and maybe the better thing would be to say, and the Court or the Tribunal determines that it is not authorized, then the next step occurs. And that leaves it open then whether the to be raised either by the parties or by the court or tribunal. I think it can be done either way. But then what happens is a determination as opposed to just a dispute.
So in your analysis, Representative Shirley, it would read, if a case is transferred, adopting Mr. Schrader's language, by the circuit court under this section to a court or tribunal other than the Court of Appeals, and the court or tribunal determines that the court or tribunal is not authorized by law to hear the case, the court or tribunal mm-hmm. shall refer the question to the Court of Appeals.
Yeah.
I think that's part there. I mean, there's an assumption there that the parties can raise that issue, and I think that we have to have some triggering device. And I also feel that motion should be made within a specific time period because, as I mentioned earlier, you could proceed all the way through the trial and someone could jump up and file a motion and say we're in the wrong court. I think it should be made fairly timely after the pleadings are closed.
Well, let me ask the panel. We can easily reflect that the determination be on motion by a party. That wouldn't be a difficult thing to weave in. The question is, from a timeline perspective, is there a reason to put a short or some limited timeline on someone coming forward with this sort of a motion?
Chair Williams, members of the committee, what I'm struggling with a little bit conceptually is that jurisdiction is an argument that can be raised at any time. Even if it's not raised in the circuit court proceeding, it could be raised at the appellate court level. And while I think in the abstract, I think the idea of having, you know, motions practice be engaged in at the earliest stage of the proceeding is a good one, I'm not exactly sure how to incorporate that or how to address that problem, because I think that somebody would be potentially excused from raising the jurisdictional argument even if they didn't raise it at any point in the trial court proceeding. That's, you know, an initial hit. I mean, obviously, you know, one of the concerns here is that we're trying to deal with this in a rather compressed time frame, but that's my initial hit on it. I'm sorry, so, I can't be more definitive.
So, Mr. Schradel, if I understand you, you think that probably not limiting it because it's a right that you have to raise at any time in the process.
Chair Williams, I think it would be problematic.
Right. Representative Ringo.
No. I think it's a little different situation where, on the one hand, you're dealing with a jurisdictional dispute if a case is filed in California, Washington, or another state. The person has to go to that state and defend. And you've got different issues. And I think in those cases, maybe there are reasons why you can dispute jurisdiction all the way up until final judgment, even in the Court of Appeals. In this case, I don't think you've got those considerations. You're in the same building. You're just using a different mechanism that creates a different jurisdictional issue. And I would hate to see what Representative Ackerman raises, where somebody sits back at the end of the case and says, well, wait a minute, there's no jurisdiction here. And to me, the considerations are a little different. And I don't know if we inserted into this bill requirement that you had to contest it within a certain amount of time or it was waived. I don't know why that would create problems for that rule in other areas.
Representative Shetter.
Well, I think Mr. Schradel's point is correct, though. I don't think that parties can confer subject matter jurisdiction on a court or tribunal that it doesn't have.
Right.
Personal jurisdiction is one thing, but subject matter jurisdiction, and if you've got an adoption case proceeding in front of LUBA, it doesn't matter how long you wait to raise the objection, LUBA doesn't have the authority to grant an adoption.
I tend to agree. I tend to agree, Representative Rigo. On subject matter jurisdiction, I think that you can always raise that issue.
I appreciate the analysis. I would like to think that there's some way to resolve it, though.
Well, it would be the chair's hopefulness, because we've spent so much time on this bill. To keep the discussion going as we move it along, because I do think that there are some additional things that can be done, I would posture or I guess put forward the possible amendment to subsection 3 of section 1, which we've discussed. My thought on the amendment would be that it read, if a case is transferred by the circuit court under this section to a court or tribunal other than the court of appeals, and the court or tribunal determines on motion by a party that the court or tribunal is not authorized by law to hear the case, the court or tribunal shall refer the question to the court of appeals. So we've gotten motion by the party, we've gotten determines as opposed to disputes, and we've added that language that Mr. Schradl put forward by the circuit court. That at least, Mr. Schradl.
Chair Williams, I hesitate, but I would maybe suggest on motion by a party or on the court's own motion, or on the court or tribunal's own motion.
Okay.
To cover all the bases.
Here's what I'm going to do. We're going to adjourn without moving this bill. And I'm going to give everybody till Monday. Isn't our next hearing on? No.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if it's Monday, but maybe the best thing to do would be require people to show up at my office at like 9 or 10 o'clock tomorrow to sit down around the table. Because let me just give you an example. When we talk about Section 1, Subsection 6, I read it a little while when I got the bill myself and decision of the Court of Appeals, and I called up Dave Hendricks and said, that's unusual. He said, well, that's what the parties wanted. So, I mean, this is one of the difficulties we're having is that unless we have everyone around the table, unless we sweat this thing out, working it through, what we do is we come to an agreement one day, people reread it and come back and come up with different changes, and then the whole sweater starts to be unravel again, then we knit it back again, and then we start the process over
well,
again.
Well, let me say this. At 10 o'clock tomorrow in Mr. Taylor's office, there will be a meeting on this bill. Those who have interests appear and make your comments known and attempt to work out an agreement or forever hold your peace, because it would be the chair's intention to move this bill at the next full Judiciary Committee meeting, which I believe is scheduled for Monday at 5 o'clock next week. And having watched the Ten Commandments over the weekend, in the words of the Pharaoh, Ramses II, so let it be written. So let it be done.
Let it be done.
All right, Representative.
Let my people go.
Are you going to feel too bad if the non-attorneys on this committee don't show up?
I won't. You know what, Representative Krieger? I don't care who shows up.
As long as we don't have a quorum.
So I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3119. And I'm going to adjourn the committee. I want to thank everybody for their hard work. The speaker tells me if we keep it up at this pace, we'll qualify for our production bonus at the end of the session.
Oh, and what might that be?